from the trenches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Trenches, real life in the accounting industry. We are brought to you by BGL, Australia's number one corporate compliance and superannuation software. We are having a lovely day down in Melbourne, Paul. My name is David Boyer from Sequel CFO, and I'm joined here with you again, mate. But, yeah, we're going on a break soon. This is one of the last ones of the year.
Christmas coming up. Hello, listeners. Hello, all. Last week, looking forward to a break. I tell you, it gets to the end of the year. You get ready for it. The kids are over it. Everyone's over it anyway. But I hope everyone's got something good planned. David, actually, we should go into the in-depth topic, because we like to mention that up front.
To forget that we're supposed to mention it up front.
I always
forget.
We'll
almost get it right.
So last year, this time last year, we did, everyone was doing the what will happen in 2018. We did the what won't happen or what won't change.
We're such the original love starts.
We're set original. So at the end of, this episode, after the best on worst on ground, we will be recapping a rather successful period, David, of
because, and this is inspired by our mate Matt Paff, who holds himself accountable for his predictions. You can't call yourself a futurist if you don't hold yourself accountable to what you think the future's going to hold. And you and I are by no means futurists, but we do put a few
Matt's
opinions out there every
lately.
Now and again.
Well, what's Matt done since the zero? I'm going to send him a message.
Client work?
Oh, potentially.
Making a living,
making
I would
a living.
Have thought, maybe.
Can't, novel,
can't
novel
deny
concept.
Him for that.
David, get us kicked off. Best on ground.
Best on ground for me. Well, we're leading into the Christmas period, the holiday period, the summer period. I've just finished Hanukkah, big day, 8 crazy nights with my family. And what the end of year period is for a lot of people is they catch up on reading, they catch up on fiction, business books. I've got a few new business books that I'm going to be putting out on social media soon, actually, what I'm reading over the summer break. But a lot of people more and more are turning to podcasts and audiobooks for education. Now, not to demean podcasts, so I'll focus on audiobooks, Paul, because podcast is our medium of choice.
Absolutely.
Don't want to insult dear listener out there. But is reading better than listening to an audiobook? Do you absorb it much? Well, the New York Times has published an article by Daniel Willingham, who's a psychologist at the University of Virginia. I guess that sounds amazing. Basically, he says reading is only 6,000 years old. Writing is only less than 6,000 years old. It sounds like a lot, but only. In the terms of biological development, 6,000 years isn't enough for us to natively have writing skills innate built into our DNA. It's not enough time on the evolution timeframe. So it sort of doesn't mean that writing is as important as typing, for example. But reading, apparently, is a lot older. They did a scientific subject for a 22-minute podcast versus a printed article on the same topic. Although students spent the same time with each format, on a written quiz 2 days later, readers score 81% and listeners 59%. Reading is proven to have a more lasting impact on your knowledge retention than listening. I wonder if that's going to change what everyone's planning to do over their summer breaks.
Take a book. Don't take a podcast. No, take a podcast.
We'll take this podcast.
Take this, every other podcast, not
they're
so much.
Crap. You're not going to learn
print,
a thing.
Should we print it? Should we print our podcast as a book, David? You've written a book.
How about we just try to get the show notes up on time
there's
so that everybody
there's
can...
There's a lot of books getting around. I think that's interesting. For me, I think that stems from what else you're doing while you're listening. You know, I think it's hard. When you're reading, you sort of, that's all you get to do. When you're listening, you might be like, I know I listen to things while I'm doing the washing or cooking dinner or whatever. So you do tend to get distracted. And anyway, so maybe that has something to do with the retention. I'm not sure, but very interesting. Apart from that, podcast rock.
Oh, mate, podcasts are the best way to learn and keep up to date with modern current affairs in the accounting industry, aren't they, Paul? My next best on ground, Christine Oliver, forensic accounting expert at Ferrier Hodgson, has put up on LinkedIn a video very sleekly produced by one of the country's biggest insolvency experts explaining different types of financial information to lawyers. The video is 2 minutes 36 seconds. It's very, very sleek, and it talks about tax reports, financial statements, management accounts, valuation information. The goal is to help educate lawyers on different types of financial information and how they impact different users. But Paul, I dare say there's a fair few tax accountants out there who might be reminded that there are different users for different pieces of information. Yourself, Mr. There should just be one accounting standard and small business should report on tax basis only, Paul Meisner.
Yeah, well, my points on that still stand. That was about the fact that statutory accounts have no place in small or micro businesses, David. That was more what I was saying.
But I will say they make better decisions off management accounts.
I've always said that there are up to 5 sets of accounts that I could do on any given year for a client between management, bank, valuations, investors, all those things in the video. Anyway, check out the video. It was very good. Most accountants would know that. Couldn't articulate it necessarily as well.
It is nice that Ferriers are spending money on these glossy video productions educating lawyers while their partners run to get new gigs and new jobs at the Big Four. Is all the press, the Big Four, headhunting all the honchos at Ferriers trying to get all the big restructure fees? Well, what's left now that the banks do most of it themselves these days?
Does seem to be one-way street flowing in the direction. David, keep going. You're on a roll, mate.
No, it's it for my best on ground, mate. We've got one in the best category, but I'm actually going to put it in my worst.
Yeah, I was going to say I wasn't sure why that was in best, so that's good. I'm glad you can save it.
Best on ground, Paul Meisner.
Best for me. Well, I got a couple. So we've got one that's going to be in. I'll do one at the end because it's going in your worst on ground. I'm going to put it in the best on ground.
Is this not often something makes a best and a worst in one hit, does it? It's happened before.
Often because there's two angles. We come at it from two different sides. What happened might have been bad, but the result might be good. Anyway, we'll talk about that
Journalistic integrity.
In a second. Walker Hamill, a recruitment firm, have got a blog on their website written by a migration agent called Melanie Meisner. For those listeners at home, they may recognise the surname. This is my lovely wife, who doesn't listen to the show, so I can talk about her. She's had a lot of great feedback on this, mainly because I especially listen to her talk about migration all the time. But
really? Because she does not listen to you talk about accounting.
She does not listen to me
at all.
You're
a good husband, Paul.
About this. So, no, a great breakdown. If you ever have questions about what are the options for visas working in Australia, it lists out all the different visa types, a rough breakdown on lengths, application processes. She's getting some great feedback from the clients of Walker Hamill. A good information piece if you want to demystify migration. Yes.
Well done, Mel. Good piece. I didn't understand the difference between working holiday visas and employer-sponsored visas. I thought they were exactly the same. Very quick summary. I feel like whenever this topic comes up in conversation, I have nothing to contribute to it. I haven't educated myself.
Migration or?
People talk about this all the time and the impact on attracting staff. It's definitely a hot political issue. You don't let me talk about politics on the show, though.
With good reason. Cool, I'm going to keep going. So, Tax Practitioners Board, we've often been spoken... I've just got to check the embargo date on this, yes.
That's right, we got news under embargo.
We did.
#journalist.
#not really. When you get a call from the TPB talking about this kind of stuff, Mike, a kind of part of me just went... But... Anyway, we spoke about it earlier this year, I think, David, about in the budget there was money for the Tax Practitioners Board to have a look. We're kind of starting to see, as of 10 o'clock this morning, see what they're going to do with it. The Tax Practitioners Board, who have long asked agents to make sure that their tax compliance was up to date, have really never looked into it much, never had the capacity or the capability to check in. I am being told that they have received a lot of data or are getting a lot of data from the ATO about tax agents' personal tax situations. There are 2,500 tax practitioners who have not lodged one or more of their income tax returns. This includes BAS agents and other financial agents as well. 1,000 have more than one outstanding BAS. And 500 tax practitioners have a combination of both. So there is a very short 6-week window of get your house in order kind of stuff, and in which case next year, mid-Jan, Feb, March, we may see some activity in this space. Won't be audits, but will be a please explain, please bring your house into order.
The whole story of the architect's house is never built, the plumber has the leakiest pipes, the tax agent's the last person to lodge his tax return. Not anymore.
How's your BAS going, David?
We're up to date, mate.
I'm not. I kind of felt they were calling it me.
But we'll be up to date by the time this goes to air. How's that?
There you go. But very interesting though, because I mean, I think a lot of us always. I mean, I use it as a bit of a once a year when you click that box. Am I up to date? You know, am I up to date? Then I'm always close. With the amount of data though, this kind of becomes a more real time discussion. You know, if the TPB have a watch list, I suppose. Of, well, you know, when does an agent have a debt? This also includes self-managed super funds if you're an individual trustee. Interesting stuff. Keep a look at it.
Are you, how far behind are you on your allotments?
I had a look this morning. Not too bad, actually. Not too bad. But, like, you know, like, but it's...
You get to it. But
an IAS,
you know,
you've got an instalment amount, and, like, that was, you know, it's kind of like, by the time you get it... Anyway, whatever, I'm not going to make excuses. I'm just going to be quiet now. Right, David, my best, your worst... There was an article about Airtasker were forced to pay back millions, I think. How much? Don't know.
A lot.
Forced to pay back a lot of research R&D grants. We've spoken about this many, many times on the show, David, about whenever you get a government program that effectively hands out money, aka pink bats, aka...
Solar panels. $400 from Kevin Rudd that went straight to the pokies.
Yep, absolutely. You do get... anyway, it brings out potentially the worst in people. So Airtasker had R&D. And look, in their defence, they paid... And I think the AFR reported that PwC, who have invested heavily in their R&D capabilities. And certainly we have seen a market of consultants... in this space, push it. These were big firms and mid-tier firms were offering percentage fees on the amount of refund. Anytime you've got professional service firms, and I thought it was illegal, apparently it's not, but I've asked the Institute, apparently it's not. But anytime you've got professional service firms going, we'll take 20% of the refund or 20% of the R&D benefit, those were current contracts as of the last couple of years, David.
Is this the best angle or the worst angle that you're going
at? Well, that's the worst. Anyway, that's pretty bad. I hadn't thought about that. Anyway, the best angle is there is a lot more understandably worse than good about this, but this will finally bring slightly to an head people who are otherwise just building fancy websites and claiming it as research and development. For anyone who's actually studied the requirements... To the letter of the law...
Hypothesis.
Scientific method would actually knock a lot of people out because software developers, I love them, I know a fair few of them, a dedicated scientific method is not necessarily the way those skateboarding, hoodie-wearing people operate. I've been through an Oz Industries audit and it was very interesting that... It was interesting to see what weight they put on various things. So scientific method is something that a lot of people do. So is new knowledge. Just because you build a website that nobody has built, just because your system does something that no other system does. I mean, arguably, there's a lot of add-ons out there doing exactly the same thing.
You could do it with existing knowledge.
You haven't learnt the new knowledge. No. You knew how to build it. Yeah, you had some setbacks, but you knew where you were getting. You knew what you had to build. That is not new knowledge. It's a new system.
If I write a macro in Excel that does something that doesn't exist in Excel yet, it's not new knowledge because the macro, the ability to write macros was the new knowledge.
You didn't generate a new...
It's a great example.
It is. This is not an Excel formula, right? These people have been using it going, spot I on. Developed a new Excel formula. I researched and development. No, you didn't.
You didn't.
You're like, the actual ability to do an if function was the R&D. Yeah. You're just using it. So anyway, this is gonna change...
Do you think it's going to straighten it up? You think it's a good thing? It's good that the tax office has cracked down on it? It's going to straighten... Because the grants are important for genuine innovation. No, government support for genuine innovation is important. The problem in Australia is you don't have really great public policy around innovation. We've kind of just got this bucket of cash that gets flushed out through R&D and then EMDG is the next one.
It shouldn't be taxpayer cash. It shouldn't be taxpayer cash, and here's why.
I think the government has a role in innovation. That's fine, but I don't think their policy platform's right.
There is a massive wad of cash. We've spoken about it, some people on their 18th round of funding. There is lots of funding out there.
18th.
You know, there is lots of funding out there. So these people who say, oh, we struggle. You know, they don't struggle when they're raising multiples of millions of dollars and doing parties in every city of the world and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, there is a point where you go, well, are we really struggling? And is that cash just propping up people who shouldn't be propped up?
And it's I do really feel for Airtasker in this one, because they did engage a tier one accounting firm who, you know, you kind of pay those guys for trust. That's why they charge so much. You want, you know, that you often say, oh, we just go there because we want their brand on our letterhead because it creates trust. And it's
all care and no responsibility. So not only have they apparently, according to the AFR, not refunded the original fees, they charged them more to fight it.
Perhaps, but I wouldn't say no responsibility, because if you call the R&D team at PwC these days, you'll find...
They're out. Out of
there
office.
There aren't many people there. At PwC acted swiftly on this one.
Well...
Heads did roll, Paul.
I think it'll straighten it up. A lot of small accounting firms I knew had got out of R&D for a while... concerned about what the future held. David, is that, you lead that into worse than grand. I think you've kind
well,
of...
Well, no, so I'm going to be a bit harsh on here. A lot of these grant guys are bottom feeders. They really are. They take their money. Their entire revenue model is by denying money from the person conducting research. Assume that they're doing it right. And as part of that, as part of their business development plan, they're actively spruiking that businesses should apply for grants. And like you said, often they're not doing a scientific process and there isn't actually innovation there. And I think this group of consultants, Paul, are actually more damaging than the consultants that are trying to advise accountants, because you get an Airtasker situation. And I sat recently on a panel where I judged startups. I spoke about it last week. And one of the questions that we got asked as panelists is, you know, what do you think about access to capital and funding? And I said, well, I said, look, guys, just a quick show of hands. Who's doing a startup with a spin-off from an existing business they've got? Everyone puts their hand up. So, right, an existing business has access to funding. Go to the new banks, go to the Judo Capitals, go to all these new, go to the fintechs and just free up 20, 30, 40 grand to put money into your business. Somebody sitting next to me was a guy who does grant funding. So when you get the grant approval from Oz Industry, they fund you
Afterpay, isn't it?
Until the tax office gives you the money. And it's not that expensive. It's like 20%. So it's unsecured loans. It's not for the risk involved, it's cheap. But can you imagine if you got funded, you spent that money, and then the ATO said, nah, we're denying it, we want it back? You're stuffed.
Yeah.
So I think this whole grant advisors, geez. Something, I can't quite put the word in it. It doesn't feel right.
But every time there's a grant, these people prop up.
I did see on Twitter, somebody said that PwC acted with the intention to receive financial benefit through the provision of incorrect information. That's fraud in my book. Very interesting to see that gets pursued. Where I think that where large the industry is okay is the ATO doesn't have the resources to audit every single grant.
That's the problem.
An Airtasker, big, chunky, high profile as well. You know, just doing one has already set, like it's already changed the culture and approach of R&D because the amount of press it's got around it.
And that
has a role, you know.
Anyone building an online system this year
will be aware of this now.
Who wants to go and sit and have that conversation with a consultant. This is going to be the interesting thing. When they sit down with their consultant and have their little paper clipping, how old am I? Paper clipping of this Airtasker story. What's that consultant going to say? Oh, don't worry about it. Oh, that was fixed a special, fee. You know. That. If you can't trust the fact that you can go to PwC, if they can get the rules that wrong or try their luck that hard on the rules, and there is so many out there who are doing wrong.
And the revenue model of taking a percentage of the grant amount that's ordered is exactly the same as what we heard from the Royal Commission, where brokers were incentivized to increase loan values because that's how the commission structures were made. It's exactly the same, and that method of remuneration has been slammed publicly at the moment, and I think that commission-based payments on grants should just be banned. You shouldn't be allowed to do it.
That is a black mark on the accounting industry whenever you take... You know, we sort of wear a badge that we're not like financial planners where we don't take commissions, but R&D is an area that is sort of... Nobody talks about it. Anyway, hopefully they will start to see that. Anyway, right, David, what, next worst on ground.
He mates at Receipt Bank. Now, I love Receipt Bank. I love Receipt Bank. It's one of my favourite products. They've got a piece of content out there, top 5 accounting trends to embrace in 2019. It's a bit of long form. It's not just dot points. I actually read it. Lots of people I know, my mates, are in photos that are on this article. I've got Tim Hoopman there, Heather Smith's up there. But scrolling down, number three, in big black font, Paul, compliance is back on the scene. How to embrace compliance at your firm. Hey, accountants, who hasn't embraced compliance? This has been bread and butter for the last 180 years. What do you mean it's back? Where'd it go? Just because the content marketers started saying it was going doesn't mean it ever went. The actual amount of compliance has gone through the roof. Sure, some people are saying there's a bit of fee pressure around it, but it's not going. It's back. You know what it is? Compliance is like the colour black. It's never out of fashion. Black isn't fashionable, so it can't go out of fashion. Compliance is always there. It's enduring. It's omnipresent. Omniscient, Paul.
Well, big word. I mean, 2 years ago, Receipt Bank were talking about compliance would go in 3 years. Then they're saying this year we saw a revival of it and saying that it's tipped to grow in the future. This is why content marketers should just stop. This is the lawyers charging by the word theory. This is content for the sake of content. Just help people use your software. Just build software that solves a problem and show people how to use it. Show people how to solve a problem. Don't create a problem. Don't comment on problems that may or not exist. Do not get whoever the content writer was on this just to take the fortune cookie wisdom that they're hearing from the echo chamber going around there from all these software and consultant types.
You know,
just help accountants.
Overall, this isn't such a bad article. It refers to a lot of other reports. It's probably worth having a read. It'll be up on our show notes. But seriously, when you've been running marketing departments, and actually, I don't think we've pulled Receipt Bank up on much. I think their content marketing is pretty good. I've run out of things to say about this, Paul.
You brought that to me this morning. Otherwise, I would have gone. Anyway, I can't. I just can't talk about it anymore. I just can't. I'm disappointed. Sophie, I'm disappointed. Louis, I'm gonna call him.
This is UK one. I think Sophie's head of UK now. Louis's head of Australia.
I'm shaking my head. Anyway, we'll find out. We'll get to the bottom of that.
Have we got? Do I have any more worsts? Can't remember.
Don't know.
You do.
I got a couple. It's been a big week.
Hit me. Go for it.
First of all, Ed Hayes. Shout out to Ed Hayes. There's a current trend, David. It's been around for a while, but I don't get this. There's two. Kane Munro, friend of the show, had said it the other day, but Ed came out. So what I don't get, David, is people who are offering a service of providing low-cost compliance outsourced labour, right? They're not solving any other problem than to give accountants lower cost staff to do the same thing.
So they're increasing your margin.
They're basically saying do the same job. But these same people, David, who are offering this service are also saying that compliance is dying. So if compliance or this grunt work is disappearing, why do I need to then solve it by getting the rest of my work, which arguably I'm probably more scaled to do now?
What exactly is the worst on ground you're talking about here?
Well, I can't understand why people who are providing a service of doing compliance work are trying to argue for us to use them to do the compliance work that is apparently disappearing in the first place.
Well, there's a difference because, and I've said this many times, and I won the debate that I had with you last year about this, it's not that it's disappearing, although some of them have said that it is. It's that the way it's getting done is changing. This is all accounting work. And I think they've got a fair argument. I'm a fan of offshoring. We're over in the Philippines, at DV Philippines. I've been talking to Nick Sinclair a lot at Outsourced Accountant, who's also a huge fan of the show. If you can get a great result for your client and increase your gross margin, why wouldn't you?
But Rod Drury put it exceptionally well when he said, outsourcing is just a problem automation hasn't killed yet.
And Paul Meisner said Zero's automation doesn't even do what Zero says it does.
Of course it doesn't.
So it's not there yet. So until it comes, if it comes, why wouldn't you take advantage of the margin you can get now?
You can still get, it's not where zero and all of the products, it's not where they say it is. It's not where their marketing team says
it is. It's not. So in the meantime, in the 5 years this has been going on,
a
lot of firms are more profitable and scaling better and servicing clients better and having less client turnover and less downtime.
Outsourcing is not as efficient and doesn't have the same efficiencies for smaller firms. David, 85% of firms are micro firms. We've said that before on the show. That is where.
But what if they're not writing to micro firms then? Maybe that piece of content isn't, the audience isn't the micro firm.
But what I'm saying is it's not even the majority of firms, David.
But it's enough. Outsource accountant just got to 1,000 heads. DV's grown 50% over the last 2 years.
When you're paying them a tenth of that, should you adjust it for...
But most of their guys are paid above. Most of their guys are paid.
I'm going fishing, listeners.
I'll give you an example. My staff in the Philippines are going to be the first people in their families ever to have a mortgage. So whilst they're paid less to Australian dollars, their purchasing power in the Philippines is still very strong.
Anyway, it's like...
I still don't know what your worst is. You haven't given me a piece of content. This is just an idea that you're arguing.
It's like selling... I don't know. What is it? Selling ice, but arguing that global warming. It's like you're trying to argue both sides of the coin. I think...
Oh, here's the Ed Hayes article.
Yeah, that's what it was. Basically, it was you need to give us your compliance because the rest of your compliance is disappearing. I just couldn't get it. That was all. That was my... I understand outsourcing. I understand all of that. Anyway, I still think outsourcers are just... They walk that line between not understanding what they're saying and then needing to create the fear, David, just to sell their product. More marketers. Well, that was outsourcers. This is salespeople. Got emailed as well, but stumbled on an article on LinkedIn. 101 harsh truths accountancy firm owners need to face. It's our old mate.
Old mate. I like him.
Old mate, James Ashford.
Oh, he's a top bloke.
James is a partner of, he's the marketing partner, sales and marketing partner, anyway.
At Go Proposal.
101 harsh truths. If you need 101 anything, David, you don't understand what you're talking about, I think. You don't have a clear picture. You are just throwing words at a page, mud at a wall, and hoping some of it sticks.
I don't know if Disney would be successful if they only had 100 Dalmatians.
Reading through these. It is, seriously, I am a packet of fortune cookies away from writing my own self-help book. This is... I can't even go through point by point. There is so much here that there will be stuff that resonates with anyone. None of it seemingly is original. It is just so fortune teller wisdom that it, anyway, it is just killing me. He's defined advisory apparently. So compliance advisory doesn't exist. It's only budgets, forecasts, and holding your clients to account, apparently. Compliance is not dead. I wonder if that's a harsh truth for people, for consultants to accountants. Not necessarily. I don't think there's any accountants that don't otherwise know that's the case. Compliance has been profitable for a fair long
time. Your clients don't care about you? That's a good one. I don't think that's true at all. I think my clients do care about me.
You have to all outsource. Seriously, this is like boiling down every... the Wall Street quote and every quote you've seen on some airy fairy wall art and changing it to try to apply to accountants and just put it all in a blog.
This is like a collection of the top retweeted business quotes.
This is just applied for accountants. Anyway,
there is some inspiration in this. I think some of it's
but there's,
okay.
There's enough, David.
Your clients have no loyalty to you? Not really. Well, if you're doing a good job, they do. I don't agree with that.
I'm sure there's a lot to agree with, there's a lot not to agree with, but...
You just think that there shouldn't be 101 harsh truths. The business isn't that complicated.
I think that this reads like somebody who is just observing every quote and rehashing them rather than ever actually done a job.
Well, number 101...
Or sat in front of a client that kind of stuff.
I don't have such a problem with it. I think some of them are just fodder. I disagree with a lot of them, but that's okay if you disagree with it. I think some of them missed the mark. It's massively. Noise. The it's final noise. One, if not now, when, then how? If not then who? If not now, then when? Ancient...
Dr. Seuss!
It's not Dr. Seuss. It's Hillel, one of the sages of the Jewish culture, mate. It's one of the, I think I learned that one in primary school. It's one of the big phrases. James Ashford just applying it to accounting firms. Sometimes I think we overstate our importance in the world, Paul.
I haven't searched for the word why, but I'm sure like know your why or any other like, anyway, quotes. It's just...
No, nothing on why.
Anyway, I think it was just pointless. Whatever. It was noise for the sake of noise. I'm sure accountants out there, just do your jobs, do it well.
It's done well.
Let's go.
18 right. reshares. People seem to like it, Paul.
He has a big following though, as you pointed out.
He does have a big following.
Right, David.
What?
Predictions.
Oh.
We've done with best on worst, I think, haven't we? Predictions. What do we do, David? Let's have a quick recap on last year. What were the three predictions you had? You go through yours, I'll go through mine, and we'll give ourselves a score out of 10, Matt Paff style. You're looking devilishly through the thing, so I'll start just to help you out, working as a team.
I'm trying to find what where my...
Hashtag teamwork.
What sheet's it in?
It's column M of something, live. My points were...
I found the old Andrew Conway interviews.
David. Accountants still buried under the weight of compliance, too busy and too profitable... I have in brackets, David, if done right, with the Freedom Accounting System pricing. I think I'll give myself a 10 for that. I don't think there has been any major movement in the lack of busyness or the adding of compliance. And in fact, I share with Receipt Banking tipping that will only increase.
Yes, well done. My first thing that would stay the same was that as a business owner, I'll still feel like I can't keep up, that I don't get done what I want. I think I'm going to give myself like a 7 for this one, because I think what happens is I'm a pretty ambitious person, and every time I do something, I just want to get more done in the same period. So I kind of never feel like I get done what I want. But I do think that that's got a bit of control this year. I think that people spent a lot of the last 2-3 years dealing with change and disruption, and now we've kind of got our strategies worked out and we're sort of just thumbing their way through it. Having said that, there's going to be some big changes in my business next year, but we'll talk about that a bit later on. I'm giving myself a 7. What's your next one?
Low scores.
Software companies.
Software companies and their products will continue not to make the difference efficiency they say they do. I think that point, I'm giving that a 10, but
yeah,
I think 10. That point is largely because of the direction that the market, how far marketing run ahead generally, rather than how slow the product development. I feel like there is good product development. What worries me, David, though, is the product development that works is great. The product development that doesn't work, it brings it back, right? So you kind of get all these features and you sort of, some of them are great and some of them are like, why? Like,
yeah.
You're just adding to my workload. You're not removing pain points. You're adding fluff, or you're adding features for the sake of features. So I would kind of say that the software's done well and then badly, which evens it out into kind of doing nothing. And marketing have apparently said that it all pretty much just cures cancer. That's how good it is. Walks on water, I think, some of these softwares.
My second one is that accountants won't trust partners. They're still going to be susceptible about forming strategic partnerships. So I'll give myself a 10 on. Strategic partnerships are more important than ever. Clients are definitely expecting more. If you, as a practitioner, don't want to deliver the full stack of cards as a service, you need to have people in your network to refer to. I'm still hearing stories that people are reluctant to refer out. I think there's two types of accountants: people who get the value of referrals and understand that their network adds value to their clients, and ones who just don't. And I think that there's still a big chunk of people who just don't. They think that everyone is out there to steal their fees. I think that's still a big chunk of the market. So I'm going to give myself an 8 on this one. But having said, so I'll give myself an 8, but there are some accountants and bookkeepers, and dare I say grant providers, Paul, who are building really good relationships and referring a lot of work amongst each other.
For me, I think it's information and transparency. We've had it on the show about creating networks. For me, I have a lot of client inquiry, and I constantly look for or get asked for bookkeepers. I know personally a lot of bookkeepers. I have no idea, largely, what their staff for, what their ideal client looks like,
yeah,
what software they're good and bad at, whether or not they're looking for
you
clients.
You need to be educated. Like, they need to educate,
exactly,
you.
Yeah, this is brand management for them,
yeah.
And just saying, and transparency. No different to when we talk about referrals, David. You've got to tell your clients what you're looking for. You've got to have your ideal client. bookkeepers, lawyers, all this sort of stuff. Like, you can't just have coffee and meet someone and then assume that they're going to think of you every day.
The difference between having a coffee with someone and having a coffee with the attendants and getting a referral is a completely different conversation. It's easy to get a coffee with someone, Paul. Nobody likes working.
Exactly.
Yeah, not a problem. On you, 100%.
But I was talking with some financial planners about this ages ago. It was, if you, as a referral partner, if you just said, here's what I am, here's what I do, here's the here's the process in point form, not anything different. This
one
is how
page.
I operate. This is how I operate. And this is who I'm looking for. I'm looking for Jane and Sally.
There
they
you
roughly
go.
Do this.
Any bookkeepers out there doing their strategic BD planning for next year, explain to Paul what you do and get referrals off Paul. May
what
you be inundated
for?
With
what
requests, Mr. Meisner.
Well, good. No, because I do get it a lot. You know, what your capacity
don't
is.
Don't you want to open a bookkeeping?
No,
would
you Jesus.
Do
oh, hell no.
Sounds like you got some great clients in there.
Part of me. No, God. I much respect to the bookkeepers out there. I just...
In fact, so much respect that you couldn't possibly do it yourself.
I just cannot do it. No, absolutely not.
Your next one.
Oh, right. Where do I go? AI will still largely be a myth. I'm giving myself a... I couldn't work out whether I'd give myself a 9 or a 10 with an asterisk. Feeling generous today. I'm seeing glimpses. I still haven't seen it en masse. And that may be because of the systems I'm using that have otherwise not... You know, again, I think it's bubbling under the surface. Certainly in the last year, I haven't gone, oh, wow, I can currently... Or the system is inherently doing more without my input. I can see finally where they are going. So that's why it's an asterisk, but I haven't seen it yet.
Big AI announcement yesterday in terms of big commercial applications. Qantas is using AI on its route predictions and reckons it's going to save millions and millions of dollars by getting the algorithm to work out wind predictions, weights of planes, all that sort of stuff. No, I'm not sure I'm giving you a 9 or 10. I reckon it's, particularly in the cash flow forecasting space, I'm starting to see... A bit more than, and I'll probably spend a bit more time on this stuff, this side of it than you do. I'm starting to see a bit more than just the general direction.
Fair enough.
It's still in bigger business land.
Yeah.
And I've always said,
that's fine. No,
it'll, what's it say? Shit travels downhill.
Rolls downhill. Yeah.
Well, it's not quite shit, but I think the tech, it has to happen and be proven at the big stuff, and then it will come in to us because there'll be nimble people. The other thing with AI is, it's not you can't just start an AI company these days. Like, it takes a lot. The battle for talent of people who know how to do this stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of like, you know, it's going to be the big software companies. So being Intuit Zero and MyOb, I think the guys who are going to lead it. There'll be some tricks and some gimmicks on the side with some uses of it. But you just can't, like, the smaller guys just can't afford the talent that you need to get AI going. And increasingly, I think next year we're going to see it. If we're using it through Facebook, we're going to see it through Google, and we're going to see it through Amazon for those of us who are on Amazon. Currently, the most AI I use is Netflix recommendations.
Siri could still not pronounce your name right.
I laugh.
I laugh every time.
You're Paul Messina. You're an ice cream shop.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Your boy, yeah.
Yeah, well, Aussies don't
but
do the R
time,
at the
but
end.
But you know, it's kind of, I suppose it's little things, and that's probably not. But, like, you know, it's something that, and I think you can in the settings, but for something that's listening, it should, anyway, that's just my
final thing, Paul. A bit on the extension of AI, blockchain and Bitcoin will still remain a mystery to most, even if the tech slowly gets used. Well, yes, I think this tech is slowly getting used. More and more firms are taking Bitcoin as payment, definitely. Clients are definitely, I think, well, from your point of view, you're seeing more clients use it as an investment, Bitcoin as an investment?
Yeah.
So I think it's
just
it is slowly coming, but I still think it's a mystery. Like, I still think people are playing with it because of buzz and hype. It had a huge hype peak this year, and then it's absolutely tanked. We haven't heard much from it in the last 6 months. The uses of blockchain, I'm probably not even there yet on the direction of what it means for us.
I had lunch with Chris Hooper, and a couple of beers, which always helps the conversation, I suppose. And I guess I finally, you know, and he sort of said this is a long way off, but he painted. It was the first time, I guess, I'd had it explained in a real practical application way by someone who's really seen it and really gets it. So I kind of, he's like, look, this is a while off, and this is, you know, all these and that's what I like, you know, and I guess that's why it resonates, because it's not like, oh yeah, it's coming next week, like a lot of the stuff we get fed. It's like a lot has to happen, sure, and a lot has to not happen, like governments getting in the way, etc. But, you know, he painted it really well, David. So I get it. I still think it's a long way.
It's interesting you say government's getting in the way. Government can be the people who turbocharge the entire thing. Just like government were the reason so many SMEs in Australia went digital, because tax went digital in 2000.
Yeah.
If government did something in blockchain and created some sort of ledger, I think in South Australia they're doing property titles on blockchain. Things like that, where people start experiencing using the thing, I think government can pay a massive rate. Now, we're going to do some predictions for next year. We're only going to do one each.
One each. Oh, you, me? Right, good.
Well, I introduced it. Usually we do back and forth.
Is that how it works?
How conversation traditionally goes.
90-odd episodes or something? So, a year of compliance. Like, I will agree with Receipt Bank.
They're not wrong.
They're not wrong. They're just, they were the ones propelling it downhill, going, oh, it's going to die. Oh, now it's back. I'm out. whatever the marketing tells them to do. Anyway, single touch payroll, David, in Australia, making tax digital in the UK. You know, we're sort of seeing it around, and anytime government get involved in a bad way, contractor payments reports now the ATO have got, those things have had, you know, massive impact. That's another sleeper, because there's a lot of people sort of going, oh, not yet. I haven't really looked at it. But single touch payroll, making tax digital, will drive a level of compliance, I think, to the, and I'm feeling here for small firms, you know, bigger firms that have the staff ready to pick up the slack. They sort of want that client engagement. I think for the small firms, what worries me both here and in the UK is that you're going to get clients who haven't had to be digital. I've had, and I look back, David, because I used to run a conversion business from desktop to zero. I've had a hand in over 3,000 conversions of clients.
That's a good headline.
From
how many did you actually do?
From desktop to, I would have spoken to 80% of them in some sort of pre-sales, post-sales capacity, capacity.
What was that word?
Pre-sales.
Sale.
Yeah, I know.
Paul Miser in sales.
Back in the day. Anyway, I know the challenges of not only getting the data in, which is hard enough.
You could be a thought leader of the year if you stuck setting, to that sales
and setting career. up these, the actual systems, but it's the change management behind getting the people to use it.
Yeah,
now, that's where I think STP is going to really have those issues. The micro businesses, there are carve-outs from the ATO, that's fine. And certainly in making tax digital. Here is my one, not so much prediction, just my one absolute tip. Anyone out there doing making tax digital in the UK or STP here, you've got to have the ability up front to be able to say to your clients, you guys are going to want payroll advice. You know, even if it is a couple of $100, even if it is just agree something up front, because you don't have to be a futurist, David, to say that your clients are going
to
call you.
You don't have to be a futurist, full stop.
I should have said that. Yeah, well done. Ah, touche. To say that your clients are going to call you. The problem is with micro firms and with small firms is once they call you, you can't send them an invoice for every 6 minutes. You have to have a mechanism because they will call.
Paul, what is the best pricing structure you recommend for STP advice? I love it.
You've got to have your clients, your business clients, and now especially your payroll clients, have to have a service, which is an annual fee for tax. I call it ad hoc unlimited tax advice, but whether it's payroll advice, whether it's any advice, they will pay. Because this is the thing. What they won't pay is if you pick up the phone and answer their questions. This is all of the five-minute questions throughout the year. Largely, for those people starting out on this, doesn't matter whether it's $200, $500, $1,000, $1,000, $1,500. They've got to pay something. You can always go up because the thing is, and you'll never be able to claw back, so you may as well get something. It is pure top-line revenue, bottom-line profit for doing exactly the job you need to do.
If you're the type of accountant who doesn't think that way, if you have a hand in at all in payroll preparation for your client, you are potentially liable for any errors.
I would be going through those.
So you need an engagement letter.
Yep.
With your insurance covered on it.
Even your traditional accountants, you know, at the end of the year, your annual, for people who bill annually on these jobs, you can add, you know, you'll certainly be wanting to think about adding your 250, your 500, your 750 bucks to those end of year accounts to deal with STP in that regard. That is it. Yours. Go.
There's going to be one massive change that's going to change the course of small business in Australia forever next year. Built that up pretty much, didn't I?
No.
The way SMEs get finance will fundamentally change next year. It is the perfect storm of perfect storms in financing. The Royal Commission hasn't necessarily created a tighter credit market for banks, but they are lending less. Absolutely, 100% they're lending less.
Getting harder too.
The 2.5 out of 10 SMEs, so the trust factor for SMEs to banks, 2.5 out of 10. Businesses do not trust the big four banks. Big four banks, the number of people in their banking teams is contracting, their service levels are dropping, they're not lending as much. What they are lending is requiring property on the line, they're not doing unsecured debt. On the flip side, you have alternative lending options coming in at the rate of knots. And I'm not talking about those, in inverted commas, shonks at Afterpay and this really dirt cheap consumer lending. I'm talking about really sophisticated business lending. Fintech is going to get regulated next year. That is a good thing. That will breed trust in the market. It may make it a bit more expensive. I don't know, but I think it's a really, really good thing. That guys like Banjo, like Moolah, like OnDeck, who we've spoken to, the big brands, I think are just going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Those big fintech lenders have mostly solved their funding issues. So they have capital to lend out. They need to lend it out. Yeah, that's right. So I think fintech is going to start to become more and more of a thing, and I think business owners culturally are going to start accepting, I pay more on a effective annual interest rate, but I get what I want when I want, and I get my money in 3 days, not 6 months for a no. You then have new bank licenses hopefully being issued by APRA in the next 6 months. Judo Capital's going for theirs. Prosper Listed got halted, but Prosper's still a really good option for some people. And I think there's two or three other, Zynga as well is starting in Australia. And then you have really innovative lenders, which is I became aware of yesterday for the first time, all these peer-to-peer lenders. Now, there's one that caught my attention called True Pillars. True Pillars do unsecured lending for things like business acquisitions at really effective rates, like less than 15%. So you've got massive distrust between the customer and the traditional lender. You've got the lender not really flushing the market with cash. And you've got all these other people that have been building and building and building, in some cases for almost a decade. And I just think the market is right for the way it's going to change. Here's the tip for accountants. It means that the relationships that you have need to change. It's not about having a relationship with a couple of local bankers to help your clients.
True.
It's about having relationships with the fintech lenders who'll all talk to you because they all use accounts as channel to markets.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a deep... You've got to have knowledge. You've got to be aware of it.
Because if you're going to give the referral on, you need to know that it's an option. And that's all it is. And you know where you're going to find all these guys, Paul? At Accounting Business Expo, at ZeroCon, at QuickBooks Connect, they're all there.
They're going to be the new outsource, David. They're going to be the new outsourcers. You remember, it used to be outsourcers and recruiters that would hit us all up for stuff. Now it's fintechs. It's already started. David, I'm with you. This is going to be a massive thing because, you know, this is, I see, a perfect storm of banks tightening post-Royal Commission. You've got ATO tightening with getting smarter with data. You know, rightly, both of these, I guess. The ATO tightening their requirements, asking for more payment plans, kind of, and they're going to use more data with single touch payroll to start to move this a little quicker. So both of those things are going to restrict capital a long way, and you've got the emerging fintech market. But you know the big questions I've always had on that market: transparency over interest rates. You know, cannot get an annualized interest rate.
That's where regulation is going to be good.
It's how the rubber hits the road. Like,
of course it is.
They will find a way around it.
Regulation combined with competition is going to force them to disclose this up front. Especially if accountants get involved, because accountants will ask this question. And if the accountant doesn't feel comfortable with it, the client won't borrow. So the market forces will prevail, Paul.
Accountants got to understand it. The other part of that perfect storm, David, which we all haven't forgotten, is Australia experiencing the rumoured to be property crunch. So those people who have traditionally gone and used the equity in their home loan to refinance,
equity's gone, zapped.
It's gone. So, you know, we may see people who need a further credit crunch at home if their home loan, their homes aren't worth it. So perfect storm, David, in the year of 2019.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this week's show. We have one more show after this before we wrap up into the summer. No? Are we going to do a summer show?
This is it.
This is it?
This is Merry Christmas.
Really? But I'm going to keep going. I like doing this, Paul.
You can turn up.
I'm going to miss everyone.
I'm in Canada, but you can turn up if you want.
I'll be fishing on Macleay Island. When I say fishing, I'm usually on the boat reading a book. Other people have the role. I'm not much of a getting their guts and stuff on your hands. But, geez, I do like whiting. Delicious. Some fresh Moreton Bay whiting.
There you go. Well, Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah for all of those out there. Have a wonderful
summer, everyone.
And look forward to chatting next year.
And I'll say a big thanks. I want to say a big thanks. A few thanks to some few people this year, if I can. Paul, BGL, Ron and Dan and the incredible team have just been such huge supporters of us. Ron, you're a leader of the industry. You're strong. You're straight thinking. You're independent.
He's got to stop traveling so he can get into the studio.
Get him in and have a chat to him. We absolutely love working with you guys. Thanks to the guests and all the various people we talked through throughout the year. Lalette College has inspired me for heaps of content. Steph Hines, Tim Munro. Who else do you talk to, Paul? Wayne Schmidt, who's constantly keeping me on my toes and making me see angles that I don't always see. Who do you want to thank, Paul?
I think you covered the list. Everyone who gave us content this year.
Everyone who we interviewed. We got to the IPA. Everyone at Wacoa.
And everyone, look, everyone who listens. Podcasts are hard because we don't often see. But I really appreciate it when people come up and or send us messages and say they liked bits, didn't like bits, thought this was funny, thought this wasn't funny. You know, certainly we're here for the accountants. We're here for the industry, so we are at your beck and call for content. If you have content, if you want topics covered, let us know. Reach out. Come up and say hi. Buy us a beer. I just threw that in. But no, thank you. Thank you, everyone. And I think the more accountants that get involved, the better the industry is.
Harumph, harumph, harumph.
Have a good Christmas, everyone.
See you, everyone.
Thanks again for listening to an episode of From the Trenches. David and I love to hear from listeners, so you can reach out if you've got feedback or story ideas. Get in touch. I can be reached on Twitter at @PaulMeissner_ or on LinkedIn, Paul Meissner.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, B-O-Y-A-R, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.
From the Trenches.